And welcome back to Coast. This hour, we'll take your phone calls with Judy Carroll as we talk about the extraterrestrial presence on Earth. Fascinating story. And she'll be next with you on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. Judy Carroll with us. Her website is UFOGrayInfo.com, linked up at CoastToCoastAM.com. Judy, how many civilizations on planetary systems are out there in the universe? What do you think?
Oh, my goodness, George, millions and millions.
That's what I thought.
beyond what we can even conceive of in our human brains.
And the different kinds of races of ETs, there are many, aren't there?
Oh, many, many. Again, millions of different ones. And as I mentioned before, so many are hybrids now. Because, I mean, they can travel easily, like interstellar travel they have. So, of course, you know, hybrids have been developed from all many, many different races.
Are you familiar with the work of David Jacobs here on this country?
I do know the name. Yes, I think he used to do hypnotherapy, didn't he?
Yes, he is concerned that the ET presence is not a good one, that there's something else afoot. What do you think of that?
Well, that's the part of the propaganda that's been put out on this. That's the whole problem that we're up against, people putting information out like this. There's actually a group down here, the reptilians I was speaking about, are very, very deeply involved in all of this, and they actually stage fake ET abductions, so they're referred to as MILABs, military abductions. And the level of technology that they have is absolutely phenomenal, and they've fooled many, many people. In a lot of cases, they target people randomly, but often they target people who are having authentic ET contact, but they also undergo these faked alien abductions. And they have even developed what Stephen Greer refers to as a PLFs, programmed life forms, that resemble the greys. And these are like sort of bio-robots that have actually been manufactured down here. But they fool people very, very easily. And I think that a lot of this, far, far more of this is going on than people realize. A lot of faked abductions, just as now they're talking about staging a faked alien invasion of planet Earth using this technology that they've developed down here. They developed it by back engineering the ships that have crashed, the genuine ships that have crashed, and they've developed these beings out of genetic material that were taken from the bodies of genuine ETs, bioengineered to create these sort of bio-robot things.
But I've got to assume that there's got to be a race of ETs that are not friendly somewhere out there.
No, actually, as I said before, planet Earth has been shunted into a little sort of stagnant pool. The rest of the universe has flowed on, and most are much more highly evolved. The negative ones are down here. They're the only ones that I'm aware of.
All right, let's go to the phones. We'll start with Linda in Pennsylvania to get us started. Hi, Linda, go ahead.
Hi, George. I have a question. I'm A negative. I know it's a small part of the blood types out there. Does that have anything to do with being part of ET? Or?
Yes, look, it can do, Linda. Most of the people who have ET genetics down here are either A blood type. I know that there are some rhesus negative groups as well. Up to a certain point it does. I think they've done research on it. I think probably the Free organization has done some research on this, because I actually have taken part in all of their surveys, and if I remember rightly, one of the questions they asked me was what my blood group is, and I'm an A positive.
Why is that so special?
Well, of all the blood groups, the A's are the ones who can get away with being vegetarian. That's the difference.
So there are some ETs that are carnivorous, huh?
Oh, yes. Yeah. There's one race of Pleiadians who eat meat. More fish. They go fish more than meat.
Let's hope they don't eat us,
the
right?
The greys are vegetarian, but there are others who do eat meat. It just depends on your biological makeup. That is purely You know, it's not, nothing's right or wrong there. It's just what sort of body you have, what your body needs. This is the reason why some people down here who are O positive have to eat meat. They try and become vegetarian and they get sick. I remember reading about the Dalai Lama having to eat meat because of this. He's O positive. And he tried to become vegetarian and couldn't manage it.
Yeah, O positive, they're meat eaters, aren't they?
Yes, that's right, yes.
As a matter of fact, I remember years ago interviewing a person who had written a book about what you need to eat for your blood type.
And, yes, it's a wonderful
book. Very strange.
Book. Yeah. Peter Diodamo, I think, was the author. Yeah.
Very good. Edward in Connecticut is with us now. Hi, Edward. Go ahead.
Hey, George. Hey, Judy.
Hi there.
Thanks for taking my call. Well, Judy, I agree. These reptilians are inflicting fear off of two experiences that I had. But after I talked to Bob David, that time I called in, Dr. Bob David,
yeah,
George,
yeah,
I spoke with him after via email, and he told me to get in touch with a Mary Rodwell. And Judy, I was curious if you did any research with her or know of her. She does studies with children who basically were supposedly abducted and taught things about, like, the universe, how it works, black holes, and it was taken up in the spaceships, basically. And I was curious
I know Mary well. She's a lovely lady. She's doing some amazing research. She's a fellow Aussie. She's Australian.
Yep. And I was just curious, like, if that, I kind of am able to pick up some of the program, but has that ever happened to you? Like, were you ever taken into a classroom or whatnot and taught things like how the universe works and whatnot?
Yes, well, we've actually had quite a lot of teaching on that to do with the human ladder, talking about the various galactic levels that we evolved through. And we've also received a lot of teaching that the universe is energy. You know, that's the bottom line with the universe, and the only difference is the different frequencies of energy. It's like an endless electromagnetic scale. We've had a lot of teaching along those lines about energy and the universe and human evolution, those sort of things we've learned.
Judy, I had a story earlier in the program about physicist Stephen Hawking talking about the universe and its beginning, the Big Bang and everything else. I mean, as an ET, do you get into that? Do you know what started it all?
Oh, that's getting beyond me. I mean, I'm not God. I haven't got all the
right
answers. So, yeah, that's a bit beyond me. From what I understand, the physical universe is a very, very, very small part of it, small part of the whole. The actual universe should be referred to as being a multiverse because it spans many, many, many dimensions, multi-dimensions, endless dimensions. I think that the Big Bang Theory probably pertains more to the actual physical universe.
Alice is with us now in Hitchcock, Texas. Hello, Alice. Good morning.
Thank you for receiving my call.
Sure.
And, my the subject is... I see pictures on the wall. I don't know what you call these LSF
was. Pictures of what?
I can close my eyes and see pictures of children at some, look like they're out in an open prairie somewhere, you know, like a convention or something. And I just want to know, could you tell me what that means? Could you, you know?
Well, tell us a little bit more. You see just pictures on the wall of children?
Of grown-ups and children, when I close my eyes right now, I have a godchild I never seen. I just wondered, this was her. God is trying to tell me something.
All right, Judy, I don't know if you can help her there.
Not really. Sounds like she's been given some sort of visions of some sort.
Yes, for some reason.
Yeah, for some reason, yeah.
For some reason. Sorry, Alice, the ET lady here can't help, but not on that one.
Sorry about that.
Blended souls, what are they?
What are souls?
Blended souls.
Come again, sorry?
Blended souls. You've got that in your book.
Blended souls. Sorry, yes, I couldn't quite pick up what you were saying. Yes, a blended soul is a soul. I'll take it right back. When we decide to be born, reborn, the soul is like the God essence. It's a pure essence of, you know, the God part of us.
Yeah.
And when we decide to reincarnate, we begin to take on the energy of the particular planetary culture that we're going to go into. And with most people, it's just one. Like, okay, if you're going to be born an Earth human, you'll link in and take on the energy from the Earth human collective consciousness. And it's like you wrap it around yourself like a skin around an onion. Those of us who are going to do this sort of work often take on the energy of two planetary collective consciousnesses. So we link into two rather than one, and this then enables us to be a bridge between the two. So that's what I've done. I've linked into both the Earth human collective consciousness and the grey collective consciousness so that I can resonate with both of them. Again, everything comes down to energy. Energy is the bottom line. So, you know, it's resonating with a particular planetary culture.
Tracy's in Denver, Colorado. Hi, Trace. Go ahead.
Hello.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call. I was just wondering what your take was on the Planet X Nibiru system.
All right. Planet X. You've heard a lot about that, Judy. What do you think? Is it real?
Oh, yes. That was actually an event that happened long, long ago. I know people are trying to project it, or many psychics are projecting it into the future, but it actually happened a long time ago. Planet X was a planet that was blown up between, I'm just trying to think where it was. I think it was between Saturn and Jupiter, if I remember rightly.
Or Mars and Jupiter.
Mars and Jupiter, that's right.
That's where the asteroid belt is.
Yes, where the asteroid belt is. Yes, it was actually a planet that the Reptarian or the negative reptilian group down here inhabited, and it ended up being destroyed. So that's what Planet X is, but it happened long ago.
Was Mars ever inhabited?
Yes, it was, and I believe it still is.
Really?
Still people there, yeah, yep.
Did some of them escape and come here?
Well, there's been an exchange between the two, yes, for sure.
In terms of the craft, can you kind of describe what it looks like? Is it the typical flying saucer look? What does it look like?
Well, again, there's so many different sorts. There's the cigar-shaped ones. There's ones that look like orbs. There's the typical flying saucer type. There's so many different ones. Each planetary group has its own, and some are shared between different ones. So, yeah, there are so many different ones.
First-time caller, Pam, is with us in Wisconsin. Go ahead, Pamela.
Hey, we've reached critical mass.
We have.
Yes, we have. We have enough people who are positive in their thoughts.
We need more. Planet. We need more.
Yes, but it's in the DNA. I know that I was here to unite the universities, and I've gone. My story, Judy, is so similar to yours, only and I'm 67.
Wow.
And my parents, my mom and my dad, were both part of this cause.
Right.
Tell me more.
I'm an artist. I have a lot of art that I had to connect back to my inner self before, because I was way out on cloud nine for a long time, and I knew I had to fix what was wrong inside. So it is a meditative thing, and I've been zapped so many times, but the world got in the way a lot. It is a collective, and there are multi dimensions, and I've been there and done that. And I did have such lucid dreams that I was bringing them back to the planet and going freaky out for a long time, and then I let the dreams even go so that I knew I was doing the business I needed and that I would actually get the help I needed, and I've really connected to universities on so many thoughts, and I'm excited about it because I know we've reached that dual twin soul linkage for the 100 monkey rule in metaphysical reality. Now, that sounds nuts, but I am crazy lady. I now read tarot cards.
Good, yeah. Yeah, it sounds like you've had a very interesting, you know, life and a lot of interesting experiences.
How many people, if you would just walk up to a crowd, would be ETs from another life, Judy?
Oh, my goodness, that's hard to say. I guess it would depend on where the crowd was. The ET people tend to be into sort of creative type things, but they're not into sporting things. So say, for example, you turned up at a sports stadium, there probably wouldn't be that many there. Whereas if you turned up at a lovely classical music concert, then there'd be quite a few of them.
Let's go to Talent Oregon. Hamza's with us west of the Rockies. Hi, Hamza.
Hi there. Hi, Judy. I've been enjoying listening to you. I just wanted to chime in about the, you know, I feel like I've had experiences as a contactee through growing up, through childhood, and I had another experience that I won't go into details, but I think there was some hybridized, there is something going on there with children that I maybe donated an egg to. Anyway, I've been a vegetarian for like 27 years. And like I said, I've been a contactee and was always gravitated to very spiritual esoteric things since I was a child. But I'm O positive, and which is very, I know people keep saying that I'm, you know, O positive supposed to eat meat, but I'm just here to tell you that it's not a hard and fast rule, because I've been a very healthy, happy vegan, raw vegan, and vegetarian for over 25 years.
Yeah. Probably because you have got ET genetics in you. That's probably why it's suiting you so much.
Judy, in terms of your lifestyle, I mean, when you were a Zeta, any idea how long you lived?
I think I was probably about, I think I had about 500 years of age. Yes.
My gosh.
I wasn't the youngest one there.
Even if you got a quarter of that on this planet, it would be good, huh?
You'd be doing really well, hey?
Let's go to Rick in Wisconsin.
Go ahead,
Rick.
Good morning, George. Great program. This is my 70th year on planet here. And
good for you.
Thank you. And I'm looking out over Lake Winnebago and in Wisconsin, and I'm thinking about if Judy could tell us when our black hole here at the Milky Way meets with the black hole in Andromeda in two billion years, could she tell us, give us an idea as we progress through that path, how it will be like when we get, say, close to 2 billion years? Will we speed up, or
will we even be here, Judy, in 2 billion years?
Could you just put that question again? I'm having a bit of trouble hearing the phone.
Well, when two black holes collide, for example, what happens?
Right. Yeah. I guess it depends on where they were. I mean, you know, if they were close enough, yes, we wouldn't survive.
I mean, ours and Andromeda. I mean, we get gobbled up, wouldn't we?
Yeah.
That's a dangerous thing. Judy, stay with us. We're going to come back with final calls with you in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Judy Carroll with us. Her book is called Extraterrestrial Presence on Earth. Her website, UFOGrayInfo.com, linked up at CoastToCoastAM.com. And welcome back to our final segment with Judy Carroll as we talk about her work, Extraterrestrial Presence on Earth. Judy, do they still keep coming, these ETs?
Oh, my goodness, yes, George. Yes. Yeah, I'm having continual contact with them, as are other people. You know, there's no diminishing. I mean, I think it's stepping up now.
They don't stop, do they?
Don't stop. Well, no. My goodness, no.
Let's go to Paul in Omaha, Nebraska, east of the Rockies. Hey, Paul, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you.
Sure.
Judy, those of us who are mostly human and spiritual have learned that we have spirit guides, and when we go back post-life to the spirit world and or heaven and meet with our master counselors and so forth, are these really grays?
No, not necessarily. We tend to link back with our soul family. We're, after death, as you say, you know, we pass over to a higher dimensional frequency. We actually come back to source, come back to oneness. Return to God is a good Christian term to use. So, you know, they're not necessarily greys. I mean, like in my case, they would be, but not for everybody.
Not at all. Judy, what's next for this planet? What's on the table for us?
Well, what we're really hoping is that, you know, the 100 monkey effect will happen, like the caller was talking in before. We'll get a critical mass of people who are willing to start taking responsibility for themselves, realizing that we create our own reality, and so start to think in a more positive way. Hopefully that now that we're all starting to speak out about things, that reptarian controllers will start to diminish their power down here, and we'll have a more peaceful planet. That's what we're all hoping for.
Are angels extraterrestrials?
Interdimensionals. The angels are actually, when I was speaking about the human ladder before, I mentioned that there are 10 levels, and what the ones that people down here think of as angels are beings right up on the 9th and 10th level. They're almost pure mind consciousness, 100% consciousness, as opposed to us down here with 10%. So yes, there are such beings. Humans tend to have created God and the angels in their own image. They're not in a 3D human form. They're pure energy.
And of course, the future looks bright for us.
Well, yes, I'm hoping so. The thing is it's a free will planet. So, and as I said before, we create our own reality. So it's been created, you know, moment by moment. So this is why really we can't make predictions for the future, because what might be a correct prediction now may not be next week.
No, that's a good point. Judy, thank you for being on the program. Really appreciate it. Fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. There is a man in a hospital named John who sent in a request today, and he said, if you have time, would you please play for me Telltale Heart?
The Telltale Heart by Edgar Allan Poe. True, nervous, very, very dreadfully nervous, I had been in M. But why will you say that I am mad? The disease had sharpened my senses, not destroyed, not dulled them. Above all was the sense of hearing acute. I heard all things in the heaven and the earth. I heard many things in hell. How then am I mad? Hearken and observe how healthily, how calmly I can tell you the whole story. It is impossible to say how first the idea entered my brain, but once conceived, it haunted me day and night. Object there was none, passion there was none. I loved the old man. He had never wronged me. He had never given me insult. For his gold I had no desire. I think it was his eye. Yes, it was this. He had the eye of a vulture, a pale blue eye with a film over it. Whenever it fell upon me, my blood ran cold, and so by degrees, very gradually, I made up my mind to take the life of the old man and thus rid myself of the eye forever. Now this is the point. You fancy me mad? Madmen know nothing, but you should have seen me. You should have seen how wisely I proceeded, with what caution, with what foresight, with what dissimulation I went to work. I was never kinder to the old man than during the week before I killed him. And every night, about midnight, I turned the latch of his door and opened it, oh, so gently. And then, when I had made an opening sufficient for my head, I put in a dark lantern. All closed, closed, that no light shone out. And then I thrust in my head. Oh, you would have laughed to see how cunningly I thrust it in. I moved it slowly, very, very slowly, so that I might not disturb the old man's sleep. It took me an hour to place my whole head within the opening, so far that I could see him as he lay upon his bed. Ah, would a madman have been so wise as this? And then, when my head was well in the room, I undid the lantern cautiously, oh, so cautiously. Cautiously, for the hinges creaked. I undid it just so much that a single thin ray fell upon the vulture eye. And this I did for 7 long nights, every night just at midnight, but I found the eye always closed, and so it was impossible to do the work. For it was not the old man who vexed me, but his evil eye. And every morning, when the day broke, I went boldly into the chamber, and spoke courageously to him, calling him by name in a hearty tone, and inquiring how he has passed the night. So you see he would have been a very profound old man, indeed, to suspect that every night, just at 12, I looked in upon him while he slept. Upon the 8th night, I was more than usually cautious in opening the door. A watch's minute hand moves more quickly than did mine. Never before that night had I felt the extent of my own powers, of my sagacity. I could scarcely contain my feelings of triumph. To think that there I was, opening the door little by little, and he not even to dream of my secret deeds or thoughts. I fairly chuckled at the idea, and perhaps he heard me, for he moved on the bed suddenly, as if startled. Now you may think that I drew back, but no. His room was as black as pitch with the thick darkness, for the shutters were close fastened through fear of robbers, and so I knew that he could not see the opening of the door, and I kept pushing it on, steadily, steadily. I had my head in, and was about to open the lantern, when my thumb slipped upon the tin fastening, and the old man sprang up in bed, crying out, "Who's there?" I kept quite still and said nothing. For a whole hour I did not move a muscle, and in the meantime I did not hear him lie down. He was still sitting up in the bed listening, just as I have done, night after night, hearkening to the death watches in the wall. Presently I heard a slight groan, and I knew it was the groan of mortal terror. It was not a groan of pain or of grief. It was the low, stifled sound that arises from the bottom of the soul when overcharged with awe. I knew this sound well. Many a night, just at midnight, when all the world slept, it was welled up from my own bosom, deepening, with its dreadful echo, the terrors that distracted me. I say I knew it well. I knew what the old man felt, and pitied him, although I chuckled at heart. I knew that he had been lying awake ever since the first slight noise, when he had turned in the bed. His fears had been ever since growing upon him. He had been trying to fancy them causeless, but could not. He had been saying to himself, "It is nothing but the wind in the chimney. It is only a mouse crossing the floor, or it is merely a cricket which has made a single chirp." Yes, he had been trying to comfort himself with all these suppositions, but he had found all in vain. All in vain, because death, in approaching him, had stalked with his black shadow before him and enveloped the victim. And it was the mournful influence of the unperceived shadow that caused him to feel, although he neither saw nor heard, to feel the presence of my head within the room. When I had waited a long time, very patiently, without hearing him lie down, I resolved to open a little, a very, very little crevice in the lantern. So I opened it. You cannot imagine how stealthily, until at length a simple dim ray, like the thread of the spider, shot from out the crevice and fell upon the vulture eye. It was open, wide, wide open, and I grew furious as I gazed upon it. I saw it with a perfect distinctness, all a dull blue, with a hideous veil over it that chilled the very marrow in my bones. But I could see nothing else of the old man's face or person, for I had directed the ray, as if by instinct, precisely upon the damned spot. And have I not told you that what you mistake for madness is but over-acuteness of the sense? Now, I say, there came to my ears a low, dull, quick sound, such as a watch makes when enveloped in cotton. I knew that sound well, too. It was the beating of the old man's heart. It increased my fury as the beating of a drum stimulates the soldier into courage. But even yet I refrained and kept still. I scarcely breathed. I held the lantern motionless. I tried how steadily I could maintain the ray upon the eve. Meantime, the hellish tattoo of the heart increased. It grew quicker and quicker and louder every instant. The old man's terror must have been extreme. It grew louder. I say louder every moment. Do you mark me well? I have told you that I am nervous. So I am. And now, at the dead hour of the night, amid the dreadful silence of that old house, so strange a noise as this excited me to uncontrollable terror. Yet for some minutes longer, I refrained and stood still. But the beating grew louder, louder. I thought the heart must burst. And now a new anxiety seized me. The sound would be heard by a neighbor. The old man's hour had come. With a loud yell, I threw open the lantern and leaped into the room. He shrieked once, once only. In an instant, I dragged him to the floor and pulled the heavy bed over him. I then smiled gaily to find the deed so far done. But for many minutes, the heart beat on with a muffled sound. This, however, did not vex me. It would not be heard through the wall. At length, it ceased. The old man was dead. I removed the bed and examined the corpse. Yes, he was stone, stone dead. I placed my hand upon the heart and held it there for many minutes. There was no pulsation. He was stone dead. His Eve would trouble me no more. If you still think me mad, you will think so no longer when I describe the wise precautions I took for the concealment of the body. The night waned, and I worked hastily, but in silence. First of all, I dismembered the corpse. I cut off the head and the arms and the legs. I then took up three planks from the flooring of the chamber and deposited all between the scantlings. I then replaced the board so cleverly, so cunningly, that no human eye, not even his, could have detected anything wrong. There was nothing to wash out. No stain of any kind, no blood spot, whatever. I had been too wary for that. When I had made an end of these labors, it was 4 o'clock, still dark as midnight. As the bell sounded the hour, there came a knocking at the street door. I went down to open it with a light heart. For what had I now to fear? There entered three men, who introduced themselves with perfect suavity as officers of the police. A shriek had been heard by a neighbor during the night. Suspicion of foul play had been aroused. Information had been lodged at the police office, and they, the officers, had been deputed to search the premises. I smiled. For what had I to fear? I bade the gentlemen welcome. The shriek, I said, was my own in a dream. The old man, I mentioned, was absent in the country. I took my visitors all over the house. I bade them search, search well. I led them at length to his chamber. I showed them his treasures, secure, undisturbed. In the enthusiasm of my confidence, I brought chairs into the room and desired them here to rest from their fatigues, while I myself, in the wild audacity of my perfect triumph, placed my own seat upon the very spot beneath which reposed the corpse of the victim. The officers were satisfied. My manner had convinced them. I was singularly at ease. They sat, and while I answered cheerily, they chatted of familiar things. But ere long, I felt myself getting pale and wished them gone. My head ached, and I fancied a ringing in my ears. But still they sat and still chatted. The ringing became more distinct. It continued and became more distinct. I talked more freely to get rid of the feeling, but it continued and gained definiteness until at length I found that the noise was not within my ears. No doubt I now grew very pale. But I talked more fluently and with a heightened voice, yet the sound increased, and what could I do? It was a low, dull, quick sound, much such as a sound a watch makes when enveloped in cotton. I gasped for breath, and yet the officers heard it not. I talked more quickly, more vehemently, but the noise steadily increased. I arose and argued about trifles in a high key with violent gesticulations, but the noise steadily increased. Why would they not be gone? I paced the floor to and fro with heavy strides, as if excited to fury by the observations of the men, but the noise steadily increased. Oh, God, what could I do? I foamed, I raved, I swore. I swung the chair upon which I had been sitting and grated it upon the boards, but the noise arose over all and continually increased. It grew louder, 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 and still the men chatted pleasantly and smiled. Was it possible they heard not? Almighty God! No, no, they heard, they suspected, they knew, they were making a mockery of my horror. This I thought, and this I think. But anything was better than this agony, anything was more tolerable than this derision. I could bear those hypocritical smiles no longer. I felt that I must scream or die. And now, again, hark, louder, 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 louder. Villains, I shrieked, dissemble no more. I admit the deed. Tear up the planks. Here, here. It is the beating of his hideous heart.
There you go, John, your little birthday present for you. For Michael Cosio, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burleson, George Knapp. I'm George Norrie, somewhere up there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.